You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. Alistair Hewlett was a good friend of the show. He was on the show many times. We talked about all sorts of folk music. He wrote his own songs as well. He's as Scottish as you can get. He had a wonderful, thick brogue of an accent. And like a lot of Scots, it's extraordinary that how he managed to hang on to it, given that he'd lived in New Zealand and Australia so much of his life. He died just last week of liver cancer. In the time that he was in Australia, he was on The Music Show many times. And the last time he was on was in 2005. We talked about his new release. It was called Red Clydeside CD, and it was as much about politics and the part of the working class Glasgow, the politics in working class Glasgow from the early 1900s. Let's listen, first of all, before we hear that conversation, to Alistair singing for us on that occasion in 2005.
Jimmy Maxton, James McDougall, Bart Burgallagher and McShane, Agnes Dolan, Helen Crawford, up at the heat, great John McLean. These are some of the Red Clydesiders, hundreds more I'd wish to name. A monument and a race forever, these are the flower of Scotland's fame. McDougall fell apart in prison, came back out a broken shell. They did the same to young John Muir, 8 lang months in the jaws of hell. His only crime was saying no to slaughter in the rich man's war. Property is theft, he said, don't die for what you canny live for. Rags and tax for common folk, silk for money lenders, the old church pew, the white and blue, the kilt and the young pretender keep us sweet. But what makes them fear is we're bred in the Red Clydesiders. Every Sunday night at Bath Street, John McLean roared out his spiel. Thousands gathered round to hear him. He spake loud and he spake weel. 15 years I've been a soldier, fighting for the cause, he said. I'll no stop now, though ye might jail me. Prison walls at any dread. John was lifted for sedition. Muir and Gallagher, Maxton too, are the leaders, so Red Clydeside trotted out for public view. While others flagged and begged for mercy, John threw caution to the wind. You stand accused, he told the judge, with the blood of millions on your hands. Rags and tax for common folk, silk for money lenders, the old church pew, the white and blue, the kilt and the young pretender keep us sweet. But what makes them feared is we're bred in the Red Clydesiders. Tortured by the screws in prison, force-fed with the poison food, haunted, shattered, still not broken, up on the cairt he proudly stood. That night when John came home to Glasgow, weak of body, white of hair, Red Clyde burned as bright as midday. Then the tanks rolled through the square. Workers' blood splashed o'er the flagstones, soldiers came with tanks and guns. Heats were broken, spirits too. The final chapter had begun. That treachery on Bloody Friday sent a stench to Heaven's Gate. John said we'll build our own republic, the fight for justice can he wait. Rags and tacks for common folk, silk for money lenders, the old church pew, the white and blue, the kilt and the young pretender keep us sweet. But what makes them fear is we're bred in the Red Clydesiders. Jimmy Maxton, James McDougall, Bart Burgallagher and McShane, Agnes Dolan, Helen Crawford, Hundreds more had wished a name above them all. By head and shoulder stood the Dominie Fay, the Shaws, John McLean, the pride of Glasgow. He gave his life for the common cause. Rags and tacks for common folk, silk for money lenders, the old church pew, the white and blue, the kilt and the young pretender keep us sweet. But what makes them fair is for pride and the red Clyde ciders.
Alistair Hewlett, thank you very much indeed for that, and welcome back to the music show.
Thank you very much for having me on, Andy.
Last time you were on, it seems incredible. It was 2001. It seems more recent than that. And we talked about this album, Red Clyde Side.
I was writing it at the
time. In the context of Sleepy Scotland, which you sang some of the traditional songs for us on that occasion. Perhaps we could start with the connection between those two albums again and how Red Clyde Siders comes out of the traditional songs.
Well, throughout the 19th century, trade unionists in the United Kingdom had grown accustomed to referring to Scotland as Sleepy Scotland because, in their estimation, the sectarianism and lack of sobriety that characterised the working class, particularly in Glasgow, rendered them, in their view, pretty incapable of contributing to the struggle to bring about social development along socialistic lines. So they referred to the central belt, to the industrial area of Scotland, as Sleepy Scotland. They were proved to be spectacularly wrong with the outbreak of the First World War because a massive anti-war movement erupted in Glasgow that earned it the epithet Red Clydeside.
Which is where the new album, it's not that new anymore, but it's where the present album comes in.
That's right.
John McLean is the name which came up a lot in that song and comes up throughout this album of songs, original songs this time, by you. Tell us, give us a thumbnail sketch of John McLean.
John McLean was a school teacher from the south side of Glasgow. He was a member of the British Socialist Party, a precursor of the Communist Party. When the war broke out, he took what was then an illegal position under the Defence of the Realm Act. It was a crime to speak against the war effort. McLean declared in 1914 it's the task of socialists to build class patriotism, to convince workers not to slaughter each other for a sordid world capitalism. And for making that declaration, he was put on trial for treason. He was sentenced a total of six times between 1914 and 1918 to terms of imprisonment. Twice he was sentenced to hard labour, first in 1916 to 3 years, released early after a year and a half, put back in again because he continued his anti-war agitation. The second imprisonment was in 1918, and he was sentenced to 5 years hard labour, but only served seven before the government released him.
His line on the war, of course, was contrary to the standard trade union line, wasn't it?
Very much so. The official trade union leaders took the position that came to be known as social patriotism, the idea that if you want a socialistic society, you must first of all establish the national security of your indigenous bourgeoisie. And so the trade union movement committed itself to the British war effort. The trade union leader was a fellow called Arthur Henderson. He committed the working class of Britain to a no-strike agreement. McLean took a different position. He took what came to be known as revolutionary defeatism, the idea that you should work to bring about the defeat of your own ruling class in order to end the carnage of the war. The exact same position that was taken by the workers in Russia, led by the Bolsheviks, and eventually by the German working class, who in 1918 brought down the Kaiser and ended the war.
And, of course, it was also the attitude of the Irish during the First World War.
Absolutely, that was, James Connolly, yes.
That was perhaps not so much a class matter, more a matter of nationalism. What about Scotland? I mean, one of the songs on your album, in fact, the Don't Sign Up for War song, says, I forget the precise line, but that it's about class, not about country. But was it, to some degree, were the Red Clydesiders, you know, nationalistic in a Scottish way?
McLean was definitely an internationalist. Later in his life, he looked towards nationalism. He saw what had taken place in Ireland. He was in contact with James Connolly. But he was also in touch with a lot of other labour and working class leaders of the time. He was appointed by Lenin to be the representative of the Bolsheviks in the United Kingdom. But for the most part, I think his statement in 1914 held true for most of the period of Red Clydeside. It's the task of socialists to build class patriotism, to convince workers on both sides not to slaughter each other. So he was, although the nationalist movement in Scotland tries to claim Maclean in the same way that the nationalist movement in Ireland claims James Connolly, I think they were both international socialists.
Okay, right. I'm talking to Alistair Hewlett on The Music Show today, and we're talking about his album Red Clydeside. Are you using Red Clydeside as a sort of allegory for the present times, or are you just a history buff who would rather write songs about history than about the present day?
Well, my attitude to folk music is that it provides us with a window through which we can see into the past and understand what was in the minds of generations who've gone before us. But we want to do that in order to inform ourselves how best to proceed in the present. And I think there are a lot of comparisons to be made between Red Clydeside and the present anti-war movement, not the least of which is the attack on democracy. It was a crime in 1914 to speak out against the war. It's not officially treasonable to speak out against this present war, but there have been severe curtailings of the right to freedom of speech, particularly in the media.
What about the actual songs? I mean, were the songs of the period songs of the movement?
It was a time when working people were not making songs to anything like the degree that they had during the 19th century. In Britain, the advent of the music hall and the popular broadside ballad had meant that song making was not nearly so common in the early part of the 20th century, as it even is today. There are a few little squibs of songs about Red Clydeside which have been unearthed, but no sort of major songs of the time were made, so far as I'm aware. Any of the songs about that period, and there are quite a few apart from what I've written, have all been written subsequent to the events.
I ask because, I mean, there are songs now, I mean, anti-war songs, for example, but they don't tend to get a lot of radio play. And I wonder I'm wondering how effective it is singing songs, and whether maybe it would be more effective to sort of, you know, hit the internet or be old-fashioned and go out, you know, pamphleteering or you know, how effective are songs in terms of what you want to do?
I think to spread political ideas, there's always been the need for the pamphlet. There's always been the need for the socialist newspaper, for instance. But the songs, they keep on coming, regardless of if they're being played a lot on the radio or you know. There's an archive in Glasgow at the Caledonian University called the Centre for Political Song. And if you type that into any search engine, it'll come up and you can have a look at the number of songs that have been made by not necessarily professional songwriters. Ordinary people have been making songs by the thousand ever since September the 11th, a few years back, with the attack on the Trade Centre. Anti-war songs are proliferating in a way that we haven't seen for absolutely decades, not since probably the 1960s. It's certainly true that they're not getting the media attention that they did back then, for instance, but there's literally thousands of songs getting posted up on that website. It would be worth any of your listeners who are interested. The Centre for Political Song at the Caledonian University in Glasgow, have a look at their website and just see what state political song making is in at the moment, because it's very healthy.
The trouble is when you talk about folk music, it's really very hard to find right-wing folk music. Do you have any theories about that? I mean, where are the pro-war songs?
Well, they do. Well, they do historically exist. I mean, even in the Australian oral tradition, you will find, for instance, shearing songs which express anti-Chinese sentiment from the 19th century. So, not all folk songs are progressive, but the bulk of them are, because they express the thoughts and feelings of ordinary working-class people, and 9 times out of 10, ordinary people get the answer right, I think.
In the booklet that goes with the album, you quote John McLean saying, "I am a socialist, alias a communist, alias a Marxist, alias a revolutionary." And what struck me reading that was actually his readiness to embrace the labels. Because it seems to me that the labels are out of fashion now, aren't they? As indeed is a lot of the dogma, even though there's clearly a great deal of, for example, anti-war sentiment around, and a lot of people who are very concerned about their governments around the world, they don't seem to want to call themselves by those labels anymore. Do you understand that?
Yes, I do. And if you go back to McLean's day, if you read the early writings of Lenin, for instance, from that period, he customarily refers to communists as social democrats. By that he meant communists. But social democrat gradually came to mean somebody who was a member of the Labour Party. So long as we know what we mean, I think we're constantly reinventing the labels, because the labels themselves become identified with movements that we want to distance ourselves a bit from.
A lot of the photographs that are in the booklet with the album Red Clydeside are of women, and you mentioned a lot of women, in fact, in the first song you sang, and you're going to sing your second song for us, which is called Mrs. Barber's Army. So perhaps you could tell us about Mrs. Barber and sing us the song, Alistair Hughes.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned her, because I wouldn't want you to get the idea that it was a whole bunch of blokes in overalls who were responsible for Red Clydeside. The women of Glasgow played a central and very critical role, particularly a woman from a working-class district in Glasgow called Govan. Mrs. Mary Barber became the leader of the rent strike movement. Landlords were seizing the opportunity to drive up rents due to a temporary housing shortage had been created in Glasgow, with it becoming a centre of wartime production. This led to a housing shortage. The landlords there began to take advantage of that and drove rent up and began to evict anyone who couldn't pay. And Mrs. Mary Barber led the women of Glasgow to fight that by withholding their rent and basically taking direct action against anyone who tried to effect an eviction. And the end result of that was the government stepped in, and they passed, in 1915, they passed the Rent Restriction Act. This was one for the people of the whole of the United Kingdom. It reset rent at its pre-war level and declared that it should be held there for 6 months after the war was concluded. So this saved literally hundreds of thousands of working-class families from being put out into the street. Massive, massive victory for ordinary people, won for the whole of Britain by Mary Barber and her army of women from Glasgow. And so I felt that she should be remembered in song. There should be a statue to Mary Barber in Glasgow. There isn't, but I have written a song.
Well, let's hear it. Thanks very much, Alistair.
Thanks, Andy.
In the tenements of Glasgow in the year 1915, it was one lang bloody struggle to keep ourselves alive. We were counting out the coppers to buy our scraps of food, when the landlords put their rent up just because they could. Ah, the factories were humming, there was overtime galore, but wages they were driven down to subsidise the war. Hoot came Mrs. Barber from her wee bit single end. She said, "I'll organise the lassies if I canny rouse the men, 'cause I'm fae govern and ye're fae partick. The shin hair's fae bridge aweer, and don's fae kinnin' far. There's some that's prods,
There's some that's Catholic, but we're Mrs. Barber's army and we're here to do the work. Mrs. Barber made a poster saying we'll no pay higher rent, then chapped on every door of every governed tenement. She said, put this in the windy, and when you hear me bang the drum, we'll run out and chase the factor of the mighty kingdom come. When the poor wee soul come round, he was battered black and blue by a regiment in pennies that knew just what to do. Mrs. Barber organised the gathering of the clans, and they burst out of the steamy, armed with pots and frying pans, in Ampey Govan and here fae Partick. This yon here's fae Bridge o' Weir, and on's fae Kinnan Park. There's some that's prods, there's some that's Catholic, but we're Mrs. Barber's army, and we're here to do the work. Mrs. Barber's army sped through Glasgow like the plague. The maester's got the message, and the message was nae vague. While our men folk fight the Kaiser, we'll stay hame and fight the war against the greedy bastards who keep grinding down the poor. If you want the stock conscription, stand and fight the profiteers. Bring the hail like bloody sandpit crashing down around their ears. We'll no starve, said Mrs. Barber, while the men we call our ain are marching off to hear their heart's blood wash like water down a drain. Cause I'm fae Govan and ye're fae Partick. This yon here's fae Bridge o' Weir, and on's fae Kinnan Park. There's some that's prods, there's some that's Catholic, but we're Mrs. Barber's army, and we're here to do the work. Well, it didn't take the government that long to realise, if you crack down on the leaders, then the rest will compromise. They arrested Mrs. Barber, and they clapped her in the jail. But they made an awfully big mistake, they let her out on bail. She called the men out of the factories, on the Clyde and on the cart. They marched up to the court, who said, we'll tear the place apart. Mrs. Barber's army brought the maesters to their knees, with a regiment in pennies, backed by one in dungarees. St. Ampey Govan and ye're fae Partick. This yon here's fae Bridge o' Weir, and on's fae Kinnan Park. There's some that's prods, there's some that's Catholic, but we're Mrs. Barber's army, and we're here to do the work. Aye, we're Mrs. Barber's army, we're here to do the work.
Alistair Hewlett on the music show in 2005. What a voice he had. Alistair Hewlett died just over a week ago in Glasgow of liver cancer. You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National.